Blog Talk Radio.
To the Red Fox Blogger. I'm your fellow host, Cal Fritzy, and your other fellow host is Tim Burton. And today we are commemorating Remembrance Day. I want to thank you all for joining us. We're going to go through some material today, and I want to share with you a very, very special conversation I had with Mr. Charles Scott Brown. He is a World War II veteran. Unfortunately, he could not conduct an interview over the telephone, because, well, he's quite deaf, but he did have some words that I'm going to share with you a little later. I'm very honored to have had this conversation with this gentleman over the weekend. But I want to read you something right now. This is in your honor. Unselfishly, you left your fathers and your mothers. You left behind your sisters and your brothers. leaving your beloved children and wives. You put on hold your dreams, your lives. On foreign soil, you found yourself planted to fight for those whose freedom you granted. Without your sacrifice, their cause would be lost, but you carry onward, no matter the cost. Many horrors you have endured and seen. Many faces have haunted your dreams. You cheered as your enemies aground. You cried as your brothers fell all around. When it was over, you all came back home. Some were left with memories to face all alone. Some found themselves in the company of friends as their crosses cast shadows across the land. Those who survived were forever scarred, emotionally, physically, permanently marred. Those who did not now sleep eternally beneath the ground, for they have given their lives to keep us free. With a hand upon my heart, I feel the pride and respect. My reverence is revealed in the tears that now stream down my upturned face as her flag waves above you in her glory and grace. Freedom was the gift that you unselfishly gave. Pain and death was the price that you ultimately paid. Every day, I give my utmost admiration to those who have fought to defend our nation. And that is Author Unknown. I wanted to share that with you. We're going to be playing some clips today. I'm going to play that clip Charles Scott Brown asked me to share with you. But Tim, I want him to come on board so that he can say hello to everybody, because after all, he's also the fellow host of this program on Mondays. And hi, Tim.
Good evening to you, Kel, or good afternoon, I should say. It's evening over here. How the devil are
there
you?
There you go. Doing a smashingly hell of a job, I hope, so far.
You certainly are, Kel. You certainly are. Yes, good evening to all our listeners as well. You'll have to excuse me if I don't address you all individually in the chat room. I'm trying to save on letters to keep the ozone layer in tip-top condition, and I can see one or two other people are doing the same as well. So that's all great news. What have you got for us tonight then, Kel? I know you mentioned the interview with Charles Scott Brown, and we did talk very briefly by email about a little article which I sent to you, and if you'd like me to do anything with that, then I certainly can do. I don't know if you had a chance to read my email reply, but basically I said...
Oh, okay.
Oh, right, okay. But at whatever time is good, I'm happy to go with that. So, yes, that's all good.
Oh, wonderful, and thank you, Tim. We have quite a bit on board. As a matter of fact, a Vietnam veteran will be phoning into the program in about 45 minutes' time, and that's Robert Ryan, but we call him Bob. He prefers to be called Bob. He's actually in the chat room right now, and he will be joining us shortly, within the hour, give or take. So that should be interesting to get the perspective of a veteran and what the horrors of war really do entail. I was listening to a radio show yesterday, in fact, the Roy Green Show, and he was interviewing a veteran. He had served in the military for over 20 years. He did two tours in Afghanistan, and he saw action in Guyana and other places as well. And he came home. He was severely injured, and it left him rather devastated. And it left his wife rather devastated, and he had post-traumatic stress disorders because of the injuries and because of the lack of help he felt that he was receiving from the government. And he was saying that he was a very neat and tidy man, a very devoted father, a loving husband, but he felt that some things just fell away from him, and he was literally a shut-in, and he had he's not adjusting very well. And so when you hear these stories, these are the men and women, people, that go out there and fight for our freedoms. And listening to this gentleman on Roy Green's program yesterday just about broke my heart. But this is something that we also have to acknowledge, is that war is hell, and that war does wear a soldier down. It can very much so. I want to, though, remind people that there is an organization that I'm proud to promote, and that is Unforgotten Heroes. And they are there for the soldier. They are there for the veteran. And if you need any help, I have the information right here where you can go and seek that help.
For many of our vets, the real battle is only beginning. With high unemployment, post-traumatic stress disorder, and life-altering injuries, coming back to civilian life can be a difficult journey. We can't wait for the government to solve the problems our veterans face. We must help those who have given so much in defense of our freedom. Unforgotten Heroes is an organization dedicated to assisting our veterans in whatever way is needed in their transition back to civilian life. Please visit unforgottenheroes.org to find out what you can do to help. You can also find Unforgotten Heroes on Facebook. And remember, no hero should ever be forgotten.
And let's be that a hero to save us. I'm not going to stand here and wait. I'll hold on to the wings of the eagle, watching the old fly away.
And, of course, there are two people I have to acknowledge for that. And, first of all, that is Dana Smearman for the voiceover, and he is of the Conservative Watchtower. And I want to thank React of Reactionary Speaks Network for putting that together as well. I said two people. You know what? There's a third person we have to thank, and that is Allison. And we know her as Rockstar in our chat rooms. She is behind the Unforgotten Heroes. So I want to thank all three of those people for that. Now, I was alluding to Charles Scott Brown. Yes, he fought in World War II. I'm going to read you the transcript of what he had to say, and then I'm going to let him talk to you in a moment. But it was D-Day. He landed on Sword Beach on D-Day. Everywhere you looked, there were ships. There was noise. There was aircraft. There was maximum class activity. Before we got into the landing craft assault, I looked at Hutchison. He was down, and we were talking about something. I can't remember what it was. And he looked at me, and he said, "We're all set, sir." I said, "Hutch," and it's one of the few times I didn't call him Sergeant. I said, "Hutch, if I do something stupid or screw up, hit me on the head. Don't let anything happen to those jocks. You look after them because you know how to do it." And he sort of smiled at me. He said, "Don't worry, sir." He said, "If you feel that way, we've got no problems." The next time he gave me any advice was when we were landing and our craft assault, and the weather was rotten. It was windy, and our little landing craft assault, used to ferry troops from transport ships to attack enemy-held shores, was just like a cork bobbing all over the place. And I'd picked up a bully reef sandwich from some flipping reason. Don't ask me why. But I had this damn big bully beef sandwich in my hand, and I'm standing up in the front, and I'm sort of looking around, trying to see what's happening and what's doing, chewing on this bully beef sandwich. And all of a sudden, I had a tap on my shoulder, and I look around, and Hutch was there, and he was green and sick. And I looked around behind him, and my jocks were the same color. He looked at me, and he said, "Sir, turf that flipping sandwich, will you?" And if you can imagine sitting there seasick and this guy in front of you standing there eating a bully beef sandwich, you'd feel the same way. Hitler always figured, fortunately, the British scheme worked. He figured Normandy was a feint. Pas de Calais was the main force. This was coming one day, 2 days, 3 days after. He held back his tanks. He didn't trust his generals. Corporals that make field marshals all have the same problem, whether his name be Napoleon, whether it be Caesar, or whether it be Hitler. They all had the same attitude. And thank God for that. He held the armor. If he had let Rommel have his way on D-Day without the armor and the counterattacks, we'd all be speaking German today. And I am now going to let Mr. Charles Scott Brown talk to you about that in his own words.
Everywhere you look, there were ships. There was noise, there was aircraft, there was maximum class activity. Before we got into the landing craft assault, I looked at Hutchison. He was down and we were talking about something. I can't remember what it was. And he looked at me and he said, "We're all set, sir." I said, Hutch, it's one of the few times I didn't call him Sergeant. I said, Hutch, if I do something stupid or screw up, hit me on the head. Don't let anything happen to those jocks. You look after them, because you know how to do it. And he sort of smiled at me. He said, don't worry, sir. He said, if you feel that way, we got no problems. The next time he gave me any advice was when we were in the landing craft assault, and the weather was rotten. It was windy, and our little landing craft assault was just like a cork bobbing all over the place. And I picked up a bully beef sandwich for some flippin' reason. Don't ask me why, but I had this damn big bully beef sandwich in my hand. And I'm standing up in the front, and I'm sort of looking around, trying to see what's happening and what's doing. Chewing on this bully beef sandwich, and all of a sudden I had a tap on my shoulder, and I looked around, and Hutch was there, and he was green and sick. And I looked around behind him, my jocks were the same color. He looked at me, and he said, sir, turf that flippin' sandwich, will you? If you could imagine sitting there cheese sticking, this guy in front of you standing there eating a bully beef sandwich, you'd feel the same way. Hitler always figured, fortunately, the British scheme worked. He figured Normandy was a feint, Port-de-Calais was the main force. This was coming, one day, 2 days, 3 days after. He held back his tanks. He didn't trust his generals. Corporals that make field marshals all have the same problem. Whether his name be Napoleon, whether it be Caesar, or whether it be Hitler, they all have the same attitude. And thank God for that. He held the armored. If he'd let Rommel have his way on D-Day with the armored and the counterattack, we'd be speaking German today.
And you can imagine how thrilled I was to be able to speak with this gentleman on the telephone. He lives not too far away from me, in fact. And I'm his young lady. talk with somebody that was actually at the Normandy landing is very humbling. It's very overwhelming. But, man, this guy is so nice. He's such a sweet guy, and he does not like the honorifics. I was referring to him as, sir, thank you very much for taking my call, and he was like, oh, young lady, don't be calling me sir. Just call me Charles. And just having a – we were just chatting, and we were talking about movies and what he was doing today and this and that. He gets up at 5 o'clock every single morning to go for his walk, no matter the weather. And he said, you can call me anytime, my dear. He also wanted me to share with you something I'm going to do a little bit later, and that is the poem by Dr. John McCrae in Flanders Field. I will share that with you in a moment. I played that clip from another organization which I am heavily involved with now, and that is the Memory Project. And that is keeping the memories of our soldiers alive. I put the link for both the Memory Project and Unforgotten Heroes in the show notes. And so my archive listeners, you can also click on those. Please go to the Memory Project. Listen to the audio clips of the veterans. Listen to them all. And please support Unforgotten Heroes. And with that, I'm going to come up for air and let Tim say a word. And Tim, what are your feelings when you think about Remembrance Day? What goes through your mind?
Well, I was brought up with a very strong sense of owing a great deal to those soldiers who died in both world wars, not just the Second World War. I had an uncle that I never knew, who was killed in the first World War at Delville Wood in 1916 during the Battle of the Somme. His name was Lance Sergeant Claude Fitzgerald Burton, Cape Peninsula Rifles, 1st Regiment, South African Infantry. And my family were at great pains to to tell me as much as they could about our family members who made the ultimate sacrifice. And he was one of them. I've got his picture on my desk, and it reminds me that I suppose on days like this, it reminds me that there is always going to be evil in the world, and there's always going to have to be people like ourselves or our brothers and sisters or sons and daughters, even if it's not us, that are going to have to fight that evil. It's a never-ending battle, and we can never assume that just because we're fortunate enough to live in times of peace ourselves, that there will always be peace. I mean, we're living in a time now where we can see storm clouds on the horizon on a number of different fronts, and I have no doubt about it that very soon, if things don't change, we're going to be embroiled in a war which is going to be, I say equally as bloody as the First and Second World Wars, given the technology that has developed in the past 50, 60, 70 years, it could well be much, much worse. Now, I personally would do everything possible to prevent this from coming about, and one of the ways in which we do it, that's not just me, but of course people like you, Kel, and all the people we know of on Blog Talk Radio, we try and make people aware of what's going on, because the greatest enemy of freedom and peace in the world today is the forces of disinformation and deceit that are coming at us from all sides. We're being assailed, if you like, on all sides by the forces of disinformation and deceit. And a lot of our young people don't know what to believe. They've been brought up in a politically correct multicultural environment, so they tend to believe that everything in the garden is rosy, and if we can all just get along with each other, then there won't be any need for any more wars ever again. And that's a very dangerous view of the world. I mean, much as I would like it to be true, it just isn't so. Human nature isn't like that. And if we allow it to happen, the forces of evil will rise again, and they will do their very best to plunge the world into a thousand years of darkness. I have no doubt about that. So we have to carry on the traditions that our ancestors, our forebears, undertook and gave their lives for, in order to keep that spark of freedom alive. And I suppose that is what I feel on a day like this.
There are a lot of issues globally right now. There's a lot of fires that we are desperately trying to put out. And what you said there, Tim, a little bit back, and you jogged me when I interviewed a retired Major Montgomery Granger, and he was talking about that. And he was saying that we really, really do not like this job some days, but we are soldiers, and this is what we do. This is our destination. This is our calling. And he was one of the keepers at Guantanamo Bay. He wrote that book, Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay. And when I was talking with him, when I was reading the book, there was in the preamble of the book, his last sentence was more or less, and I'm ad-libbing a little bit here, but he said that, do you know what it's like to have to be a keeper, to be a guard of the people who are trying to kill you and make your life a living hell? And the soldiers have to deal with that. Today's soldier is also very much trained in humanitarian work. Of course, we're peacekeepers. That's what we are. We don't search for war. War finds us. And of course, I'm speaking in the collective. We do our level best just to ensure that these ravages do not reach our shores. And if we have to go overseas to accomplish that, yes, we will. I remember World War II movies and reel clips and reading articles, archived articles, things like that. World War II in particular is very, very, very special to me because I'm the child of a World War II veteran myself. And my father was stationed in Italy during World War II. He was not at Normandy, but I lost my father when I was very young. But I remember asking him once, Daddy, what was it like being in the war? And he said to me, he said, honey, it was not very good. He said, it was hard on me because I had to look at a lad about the same age as me and shoot him between the eyes. I had to look at the white of his eyes and kill him because it was either I kill him or he was going to kill me. This is a soldier. This is the devastation. This is the devastation of war. This is what the veteran goes through. And this is what the veteran comes home with, and they carry this. And Tim, you and I, we were touching on that last week, in fact, when we were talking about Sharia law. And we're not getting into that business today because to hell with them today. This is a day to honor our soldiers, our men and women in the military, retired and active. But when the soldier comes home now, it's kind of like they really don't have much time to decompress, and they really don't have much time to recover. And back then, during World War One or World War Two, when they came home, they were traumatized, but it was called shell shock. Today, it's post-traumatic stress disorder. But the soldier has to know that we do honor them and that we are grateful, eternally grateful, for their service and for what they do to protect us. Right, Tim?
Well, quite right. And I think it's a great shame that we don't give, you and I and the people that we know and who support us on our quest, they do appreciate what the soldiers do for them. But when I look around at the what happens with the government and the way they treat our soldiers in cutting back their supplies when they're out on battlefield duty, penny pinching here, there, and everywhere, and even worse, as far as I'm concerned, the stories I hear about the military during the last American election, whose votes were collectively conveniently mislaid until after the election, so they didn't count towards the American election at all. Now, how true this is, I don't know. I can certainly believe it because it's come from so many different sources. But I think that's an absolutely appalling way to treat the serving military who put their lives on their line for the country by denying them their vote when it comes to something as important as an election. So although people like you and I appreciate what veterans do, I'm appalled at the way governments seem to use them just as a tool, really, to help them stay in power. And that's not just in America. It's certainly true over here. And although I don't know anything about Canadian history in that respect,
Canada is not holding up its bargain. Our Canadian government's not holding up her bargain.
Okay, well, you'll excuse me if I say I'm not entirely surprised, not because it's Canada, but because that's the way that governments they feel entitled to behave, and I think it's quite appalling because what should happen in a sane world is that governments should be there to support us and support our military rather than the other way around. But if we were living in sane times, we probably wouldn't be having shows like this and talking about all the evil things that are coming down the pike towards us. We'd, we'd be getting on with better things to do. But that's the way things are. But I'm happy tonight to be able to take a break from a little bit of that. As you say, I don't particularly want to have to spend the evening talking about the evils that are being visited on us by our Muslim brethren and their enablers in politics in various countries. I'd far rather go with your theme of bringing on clips to people who have actually experienced what it's like to be in the battlefield during wartime and to tell us about it. We ought to really have a much greater program in all Western countries, because certainly in the UK, I'm just thinking of the last 50-odd years, we haven't had a major conflict like World War One or World War Two. I'm not talking about local conflicts. We've had a few little local conflicts with Northern Ireland and the Falklands, but we tend to forget. We live in our comfy little world, and you know, we can go out, we get a job, we put food on the table, we have a roof over our head, we can send our children to school and have a reasonable expectation that you know, nobody is going to come and gun down members of our family in the street in a hot, military, warlike way. We are spoiled in some respects because we haven't experienced that. But of course, some of the people I hope we're going to hear tonight, they have experienced that, and I think it's great that they would come along and give us their perspective. And we ought to have a national program where people do that on a regular basis to the younger generation, just so that they don't lose sight of the fact that evil is always there, and it's only a heartbeat away. And if we ignore it and allow it to rise as it's rising again now, we're all going to be the poorer for it. So I'm really looking forward to some of your speakers tonight.
I am very excited that Robert Ryan will be joining us a little later in the program, and I have already expressed my gratitude of speaking with Mr. Charles Scott Brown.
Mm-hmm.
These are voices that we hear, that we listen to. I really do enjoy the Memory Project, because they interview veterans and they put it to tape, and all the links are right there, and you can listen to veterans, whether they be from the D-Day Normandy landings or they be Germans speaking, German soldiers speaking, Vietnam veterans speaking. They're all there, and you can go to that link and you can listen to all of these transcripts, and you can look, some of them are 5 minutes long, some of them are 2 minutes long, but it's a wonderful site, and this is how we can help keep their memories alive and sharing. And this is why Tim and myself are doing the Remembrance Day special, because we do remember, and we do not ever want you to forget. We don't want our children to forget. There is a legacy that these soldiers left for us. It's called freedom. We continue with that freedom today, but there is one thing that I want to ensure to you, is that we bring you these programs, in that I know it's one day a year, but we should be wearing poppies 365 days a year. That's what I think, Tim. But
well, yeah. I mean, the only thing about that is if we did that, it would kind of lose its impact. I mean, once a year is a good opportunity for everybody to stop and reflect about all sorts of things relating to the futility of war is obviously one theme that gets carried over year on year, but also the fact that these brave young men and women died. They didn't die for nothing. They died for a reason, and that, as you say, was to give us freedom. Now, there are some cynical people out there who said, well, what freedom have we got? Did they really die for something, or did they die for nothing? And that's an argument you can have with some of these people year in, year out. But I personally think that they did die to give us freedom, and we owe them a debt, and we owe future generations a debt. And that's the message that I'm taking away from this, and I hope I'll be able to pass it on to my children and their children as well.
And that is exactly it. What we're going to do, too, is that we are going to have our moment of silence. It's not the 11th hour of the 11th day, but it is our tribute to our men and women who are veterans and who continue to serve. And we are going to have our moment of silence in a few moments. But there's one thing that Charles Scott Brown did ask me to share with you, and of course that is the poem In Flanders Fields. He's very impressed that I had visited John McCrae's homestead. John McCrae was born in Guelph, and I am just around that area. It's not too far away from me. And I have made the pilgrimage to visit that homestead. To give you a little bit of background about Dr. John McCrae, he wrote that poem. There was a battle fight, and one of his comrades was killed. And the fires were still about, and he just grabbed a pencil and some paper, and he started to compose this poem. He was so devastated by what he was seeing around him. The blood that was flowing is indescribable for me to even try to convey. But he noticed these poppies all around. There were these poppies all over the place, intertwined with the blood. And so he wrote this poem, and I'm going to share it with you right now.
In Flanders fields the poppies blow between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved. And now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields.
A Canadian wrote that, and it's a universal poem. I want to share with you something that we do in Canada and that is recognized worldwide. As a matter of fact, ABC News did an expose on it in the United States, and the American people were awed by this. When we lose a soldier, and they come home, and they're repatriated, their hearse has to travel down Highway 401. And what we do is that we wear red, and we gather our children. We wave our Canadian flags, and we honor the fallen that are coming home for their repatriation ceremonies. The 401 has officially, that stretch of the 401 from Kingston to Toronto has officially been renamed the Highway of Heroes. I'm going to play for you a song in honor of that. And once again, this is from Bob Reed. I played his opening song, Soldier Welcome Home, Bob Reed of the former CFRB 1010. He wrote that, and he wrote this one, Highway of Heroes. And please, I encourage you, you can get them on the YouTube, or what I would prefer that you do is that you purchase them on iTunes, as I have done. But I'm going to play this for you right now.
Time another falls, we will gather here in any kind of weather, any time of year, watching for the headlights down the 401, respect and dedication for our bravest ones. Hearts fill with sorrow and with pride as the fallen pass below, on the final ride, along the highway of heroes we stand. Hear the show of gratitude from right across the land. Standing on the bridges faithfully, because you keep our true north strong and free. Soccer moms, firefighters, Legion members too, school kids and teachers, folks like me and you, standing at attention with the maple leaf held high, a grassroots benediction for the ones who die. You're all our daughters, all our sons, make us proud Canadians. Along the highway of heroes we stand. In a show of gratitude from right across the land. Standing on the bridges faithfully, because you keep our true north strong and free.
Everybody, and just to remind you, you're listening to the Red Fox Blogger with your fellow host Tim Burton and Kel Fritzy, and this is our Remembrance Day special. I'm very proud of that song. I'm very proud of Bob Reed, and like I say, please purchase those on iTunes and take them with you wherever you go and play it all the time. I want to talk to you about something here, and I'm not sure exactly how I want to approach this, but it's kind of personal. I was having a conversation with a veteran, and he was saying how proud he was to serve, but how he wished he did not have to. You people know how heavily embedded I am with our military, the work I try to do, and what I try to convey to you. Talking to the veteran and talking to the active soldier is a very, very, very enriching experience, but it can also be a very tough experience. And I was speaking with this one gentleman, and he had to tell me that he almost wished that he had never been born because of some of the things that he had to do in active service. And that broke me. That really did. That brought me to tears. Because being a soldier is a calling. And when you're called to duty, you go and you do serve. But it's hell and it's hard. It's hard on them. Remembrance Day is about us civilians letting them know that we understand and that we support them and that they are in our hearts always and forever. And we do these programs because we do remember. And I have my friend Bob is waiting on the line, but what we're going to do before we bring Bob on is that I want to observe our moment of silence, and we will do that right now. And with that, Tim and myself, we're very proud to introduce to you a Vietnam War veteran and my friend, and that is Bob Ryan. And Bob, thank you very much for calling in. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Kel. We had a conversation earlier, and always a pleasure to be here on the show, and especially this day. And I want to thank everybody for being here this day, and a lot of people consider it a holiday. Day off of work with pay and barbecues and all that. For me today, it's a somber day. Remembering the brothers that didn't come home, that came home on the Angel Wings, didn't come home on a Freedom Bird, and
mm-hmm.
It was a happy time at first when we left Nam. I served three tours in Vietnam and many other places. I was in Beirut when the Marine Barracks was hit, and many other places. And Kel is one of the greatest ladies I know, and very informative, very intelligent, and tries to keep this old Marine on his toes, and she does. And that's hence the name I call her Baby G, if anybody wonders why. She's an excellent person. And I've got my brother Michael in the room, and God bless all of you. It's it's great to have you here and show some support.
We are so honored to have you on our program, Bob, and you're taking time out of your busy day to join the program. And you're a Vietnam War veteran. You also saw other theaters of service, didn't you?
Yes, many. And just to start out, if I might try to, a lot of people, there may be some younger people in here who don't know anything about Vietnam or just saw what movies have said, and I know from my grandchildren, I've got 13, that there's not much information in the history books about Vietnam veterans, and I just pray to God our new breed doesn't come back and get treated the way we did then. And it took me a very long time for somebody to tell me, welcome home and thank you for your service. But it was my job. It was my duty. It was my honor. And to wear that uniform with pride or any branch, I mean, I consider every branch we work as a team. And me and Michael was talking earlier, a good friend, Michael Kaplan. And people have asked me, you know, do you have hard feelings about people that jump the draft? No, I don't. They don't have to live with what I have to live with daily, 24 hours a day. And they would have been a deficit, not a, you know, not somebody I would want to stand by me. And I think they're lucky they don't have to live with the things that I did. If they didn't want to be there, then we didn't need them. And I didn't want to stand beside somebody that wasn't willing to, you know, you write that check out payable to the United States government with your life. And I've done that my whole life, and I continue to do it today. And I would still be inactive if I wouldn't have a mini TIA stroke and it put me out of the plane. I wasn't going to buff the seat with my rear end, and I participated with and among my men, whether it be clear down to a private or whatever, and we've talked about this before, but I was a young man when I went in and didn't know what to expect. In the first tour, I did 3 tours in all. I can still remember the smell and the heat and humidity when the doors opened and the tarmac was filled with body bags as we walked off, and other soldiers and Marines were boarding the back as we came off, and they were loading the suit bags and body bags in the bottom. I was terrified. And
that must have been absolutely a devastating sight to see, not a welcome that you would ever want to bestow upon anybody, eh, Bob?
No, never. I would never want anybody to see the things I've ever seen in my life, but I don't regret it, you know. I took that responsibility upon myself, and I chose that life, and I stayed with that life for 33 years, and I would have stayed 40 years until they took me out in a wheelchair. And I'm still active in a lot of things going on. But, yeah, it was amazing. We left here the first time. It was daylight, and when you leave the United States, it's daylight. For a 23-hour flight, it stayed light the whole time there. And I came home on the second tour. It was dark when we left there, and it stayed dark till we landed at Camp Pendleton. When the first tour was coming home and thinking, okay. And no, we didn't have parades. We didn't have people cheering us on. We departed the plane, was put on like a prison bus, and taken to the barracks in the back at Camp Pendleton in California. And we were told that our uniforms were shipped home. We were told not to shave, don't talk about it or anything. And I couldn't believe it. I was supposed to be home 30 days, and I was home 18 days, and I requested to go back again. And I did. I felt I left my brothers down who were left over there that didn't come home the same time I did. And I did that 3 different times. I had 42 days in my third tour, and I got wounded once again. And 3 Purple Hearts send you home. But I was
amazing.
In the Tucson during 68, and as anybody researches case on, it was during the test, and I lost a brother of mine, which is a soldier. He was in Way City at the Citadel, and he lost his life. And I lost many, many friends, friends that, you know, died in arms, and saw a lot of things that only me and you have talked about privately. And it's, it's hard, and today is a somber day, just like a family member that you've lost. It's like an anniversary of their death. And like you was talking about, you was talking about the other fellow that says sometimes he wish he wasn't born, and you don't know how many times that thought's come up on my mind.
It's just really hard when I speak with these soldiers and veterans, and the one thing that always stays with them is that it was either my life and my democracies, or it was theirs and their tyranny. But the heart of a soldier is larger than any I can imagine, and I can understand that sentiment in a way, but on the other hand, I wish that it wasn't a sentiment they had to live with, because if it weren't for the soldier, like my friend Charles Scott Brown was saying, if it weren't for us, we would be speaking German today, and that, of course, is him conveying his experiences in World War II. But Vietnam, that was a completely different sort of theater, and the thing that really bothers me about Vietnam is the reception that the soldiers received when they would come home from finishing a tour of duty and hearing the stories about them being spat upon by the hippies, whose rights the soldiers gave to do so. And what was it like for you when you came home?
It was terrible. I wasn't expecting that. I was a young man, my first tour, and I came home, and I was expecting, you know, a welcome. I don't consider myself a hero. I never will. My heroes in Arlington, my heroes, I went to their families as I gained rank, and I visited with them. I've been slapped by wives, mothers, everything else, to go there in my dress blues, and personal friends. I went and visited their families, and some of the treatment I got, I can maybe understand in a way, because some of them were under my command and control, and it's hard, but, and it's hard to live with a lot of things that you have to do, and that's your duty, and you either can cut it or you can't, and that's the way it is. And Kaesong was, my gosh, that was, we were surrounded by three mountains, and they were shooting evac helicopters and supply planes down, and they blew up the runway, so they started dropping it by chutes, and they started dropping it by chutes to get our supplies, and we had Marines getting killed, and there were three battalions of Vietnamese on the hills around us, and we were under fire, and some of us went out in the middle of the night and took out a rocket team on one of the hills and killed five.
Oh, people. Wow.
It was a long ordeal, and you didn't know what he was going to... They hit the ammo bunker and blew it up, and we lost most of our ammo. We wasn't getting food. A lot of the men were catching rats, which were everywhere, and, you know, cooking them on an open flame. And we had bunkers dug down, and we had, what the Navy puts down for runways, piece of metal. We had sandbags on top of those, and they blew up our radio tower, and it was just, it was a bad situation, and we lost 228 people, and there were three battalions of Vietnamese all the way around us. And, you know, we ran them back, 2,800 altogether, because we had some Navy corpsman. We had some Army personnel there, some soldiers that were fine. I've even fought along Canadian Marines and Australian Marines, and I got to say they are top notch. It's something you live with, and war changes you forever, and nothing can unchange it.
And that's exactly it. And Bob, what you just said right there is war changes you.
I was with a couple PTSD groups, and I had some people come in that were veterans and had women in there that, you know, PTSD is PTSD, whether you've been raped, beaten, you know, robbed. It's post-traumatic stress disorder. And
yes.
Some young veterans come here and say, what's these women doing in here? And I'd have to get their phone number, and I call them up, told them to stand down. It's not a combat issue. It's an issue. And I live with that every day. And I have my demons that come and visit, but I've made friends with them. And I see the faces. I see a lot of faces that was close up and personal with the job that I had there. I was a sniper in Vietnam. And it's something that's very hard. But I know this might sound kind of cruel to people, but after a while, it's like, I hate to say this, but it's true. It's like shooting rabbits or a bird. Because you got to get your mind out of your rear end and do your job to save yourself and your men. It's not easy. And you live with that the rest of your life.
You do. And my fellow host, Tim, probably wants to have a bit of a conversation with you. And that's Tim Burton of Cat Strangler 101. And as my fellow host, I think Tim would like to have a conversation with you. And Tim hails from England.
Well, I'd like to welcome my fellow brother, Michael Kaplan, that's in the room.
Absolutely.
He also served, and we were on the phone after me and you talked earlier, and a very great guy, and much respect for him, at the highest respect. And I don't see Golf Dog in here. I see Eric. And a lot of familiar faces from different shows that I see all the time. And like you said at the beginning of the show, I prefer Bob, not Robert. Robert was too casual.
I'm going to help you change that on your profile.
Please do.
And then Tim, hi. And Tim has some queries for you.
Good evening to you, sir. I really enjoyed listening to you talking just now. We haven't spoken before, but I was saying to Kel before you came on that one of the things that my parents impressed on me was, although war is a terrible thing, there are things that sacrifices that sometimes have to be made in order for the greater good. Now, some people today look at that statements like that and they say, well, nothing is worth the sacrifices that have to be made in war. But I'd actually disagree, because without the sacrifices,
I disagree with that. And I wrote that check payable, and
absolutely. That's it. I mean, absolutely, I'd agree with that. I was talking to Kel. I mean, I had an uncle that I never actually knew, but his memory was kept alive. He was killed at the Battle of the Somme in 1916, and my own father was actually a Japanese prisoner of war in World War II, and I'm not going to go through some of the stories now. I maybe should have put something together for that, but I mean, he was very badly treated by the Japanese in World War II and lost a lung, and spent many years after the war in a sanatorium recovering. I don't think he ever regretted the time that he spent fighting for his country. And both my parents impressed on me that although it had been a great sacrifice, not just for my own family members, but for many other people that they knew that never came back from the war, that what they had fought for was something worthwhile. And there are things, bad as war is, there are things that are a lot worse. And we must, in fact, Luchadora put something in the chat room just now, which sums it up very well. And she says that veterans are the reason we have our freedoms today. And we must honor you by standing up for those freedoms now, because once again, certainly in compared to World War II, 70 years ago, 70 years on, we're facing something that's coming up or coming down the pike that's going to be equally as bad as what was facing us in World War II. And in living memory, obviously, the conflicts like the Vietnam War and so on, those sacrifices haven't been made for nothing. We're enjoying freedoms now that we might never have had it not been for our veterans. And that's one of the reasons that Kel and I do what we do. We stand up every week and we try and explain to our audience exactly what it is that our enemy is trying to sneak over our Judeo-Christian civilization and the freedoms that we currently enjoy. Our enemy is trying to undermine them in various ways, subtle and not so subtle. And a lot of the people who are going to be affected, and their children and grandchildren, just aren't aware of what's happening. And this is what we do, and we're doing it in honor of people like yourself, because you fought to give us the freedom that we can now use to hopefully to great effect and fight off the evils that are yet to come, because they are without a doubt coming, and we have to be prepared for them. So I salute you, sir.
And thank you so much, and thank Kel, because we need shows like this to get the word out, and you both have my highest respect, along with everybody in the room that's here today for attending, and maybe a little bit better of understanding of, you know, what a warrior has to live with. But we didn't do it for a bunch of salad on our chest, a bunch of ribbons or medals
or
things to put on. My grandfather served in World War I. My father did. He was a lieutenant junior grade in the Navy in World War II. He was on 8 landings. I had an uncle that was a general in the Army. My mother served in the Army during World War II, had a parachute factory, and she made parachutes not too far from here. I live in, I bought the family farm that's been in the family 275 years, and the front part of my house was log. Kel has seen my home, and it was built. Father.
Yeah.
I still got the hewing tools and the saw that cut the timber off my land. And, you know, it was my honor to serve, and I was all again today, not for myself, but for our country. But now we have a fight right here on our own land. That
indeed. And what I'd like to do, if I may, is just briefly repeat something that Michael Kaplan has put into the chat room. It's a quotation that I was actually trying to think of as I was talking to you, and I couldn't think of it, and I was trying to talk and wondering if I should try and Google it while I was talking, and I thought that would be just rude to do that. But Michael Kaplan has read my mind, and he's put this quotation in the chat room, which I'd briefly like to read if I may. And
Michael,
fine. Well, okay. Well, for anybody who hasn't got the chat room open in front of them, the quotation goes like this: "War is an ugly thing, but not the ugliest of things. The decayed and degraded state." It's all right. The chat room's just jumped up on me. "The decayed and degraded state of moral and patriotic feelings, which thinks that nothing is worth war, is much worse. A man who has nothing to for which he is willing to fight, nothing which is more important than his own personal safety, is a miserable creature and has no chance of being free. And that's a really, really powerful quotation. I thank you for that, Michael. And it was the one I was trying to think of as I was talking. So thanks again.
And that is, and that's so very, very true. And, you know, I don't want to try to, you know, like I'm standing out, but it takes a special breed of person to do those things. And, you know, at first I thought, what did I get myself into? But, you know, I could have did 4 years and got out. But, no, I chose to spend my lifetime, and I did 33 years. And because of a mini stroke, that put me out of the plane. And I would have stayed in until they took me out in the wheelchair or threw me out. But I still try to stay up on top of things, and so does my fellow brother Michael, and I got the utmost respect for him and everybody in this room, and you also, Tim. And
thank you very much. I just realized I've done Michael a disservice because I've missed off the last part of the quotation. It was a quotation from John Stuart Mill, and I should have added on the bit at the end which said, unless made so by the exertions of better men than himself. And unfortunately, the chat room has just jumped out of sight, so I've had to just give him that last bit of the quotation from memory. And thank you, Michael.
Michael is a very intelligent person. He's a writer, and he's a soldier. And me and him, we have ties. And he's excellent, and he has my utmost respect and salute from me, Michael. Thank you, brother, for being here today, and thank everybody. And I hope I could kind of, you know, touch some people with some of my stories, and I could go on for days. But Cal knows a lot about me, and Tim, if you've got Skype, I would love to speak with you further.
Well, that would be nice. That would be love. I'd be honored. Yes,
I'll tell you how to contact me on there. And I'd love to speak with you further. And you guys are doing a fantastic job, man, as always.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And thank you. And I'll turn it over for now. And maybe Michael can call in. He's in the end of finishing up a book. And if there's still time for him, I would love if he could call in. I don't know, his family just got home a little bit ago, and I would love for him. He's very eloquent. He's not like me. I'm not the best with words. But, there it is, his email. And, well, thank you, Lucia. And but you guys, I'm so honored to be a presence on your show, and as always, it's an honor for me to be among you patriots. And we know what we have to do. We have to keep pushing on and stand tall, never give in or give up.
Yep, absolutely.
Bob, I cannot thank you enough, and neither can Tim. And I'll let Tim thank you on his own behalf. But on my behalf, I am so grateful that you called in to the program and shared what it's like being a veteran. We so totally appreciate it here.
And
yes.
Thank you so much. And as I call Kel, my general, my baby G, which is a Marine Corps term for Brigadier General, and she is my general.
That's me.
Keeps me in line. I already demoted myself down to private because now Kel keeps me in line. Now I am a private.
You silver tongue smoother, you.
No, she's a beautiful lady, but I'm just a... I'm not going to say how much older than I am, but I know her husband, Mike, so
He's
a very special man along with her, and I plan on going to visit her very soon. I may go to Canada and not come back. Not that I don't love the U.S., but, you know, we've got to make changes here in this
Thank
country.
You, Bob. I appreciate that. What we're going to do is we're going to let you go back into the chat room because they're just it's just a jumping. Everybody is so eternally grateful, not only for your phone call, but for your service to the United States of America.
It was my pleasure, and I'd do it all again.
There you go.
Yeah.
And thank you, and I don't know if you have time for Michael or if he can call in or what, but Michael's got some very good ideas, and Lucha, Eric, Cats, Cass, Bigfoot, Michael, No Way, PMP, Tim, everybody. God bless you all, and thank you for what you guys are doing.
Thank you, Bob, very, very much, and I will be speaking with you soon.
Yeah, and as I always, sorry, go on.
Oh, Tim, please get the information from Kel, and if you have Skype, add me on there. I'd love to have a long conversation with you.
Yeah, I'll certainly do that. But what I was going to say is just to echo Kel was saying, we're honored to have you on this show. It's a privilege listening to people like yourself who have served and who have the stories to tell. And I wish the show were twice as long because I would just love to hear a little bit more of what you've got to say. I did have Kel and I spoke about an article that I'd read earlier today on Jihad Watch specifically about Armistice Day, and Kel was asking me if I would actually read the article out, which I would be quite happy to do, but the thing is I think it would take away from the atmosphere and the feeling that's been generated during this show. So with Kel's permission, I'd like to just post the link so people can have a look at it if they would like.
Oh, absolutely, Tim. Please do.
And maybe leave reading it out to another time. If you'd want me to read it out, I'd be happy to do it. But because there is a slight political slant to it, and I felt that it was more important to listen to the veterans' stories on a show like this tonight, I thought I'll post the link because it's an Armistice Day, Remembrance Day link. But if you want me to read it out, I will do. But I'd much rather listen to people like Michael and Bob. And if you've got anybody else in the queue who wants to speak, Kel, I'd much rather listen to them rather than the sound of my own voice. Especially
and there you go. But
General
what
Kel,
I want to do... Oh, go ahead, Bob.
General Kel, I'm not stepping on toes, ma'am, because I am the private now and you are the general. if Michael, I don't know whether he has your phone number or if he has a second, if he could call in and I'm sure that he can contribute a lot to today, which is what I considered a Remembrance Day, the way you named the show. He's a fantastic soldier, and very intelligent, very eloquent, and I am not the best at speaking, but I spent most of my life at yelling at people and telling them how to stay alive. But Michael, you're awesome, brother, and all of you are awesome, and God bless all of you. I'm going to get off here and let somebody else get a word in, and thank you so much. It's my honor. It's my pleasure to be here. No sense in honor me in any way. I just did my job.
Well, it's great to speak to you, Eddie.
Oh, wow. Oh no! Like Tim and myself, we were just so wow. Like, thank you so very much.
Yeah, thank you.
It's my pleasure, and God bless all of you. And remember, our brothers didn't come home, and the ones who are still fighting.
We will always.
Yes.
So much, and as always, semper fi. Always faithful.
Semper fi.
Yeah, semper fi.
God bless all of you.
God bless you, Bob. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, ma'am. And thank
you, Tim. Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Hand you down.
I want to thank Bob Ryan for calling into the program, and Michael will be joining us in a few moments. Until then, I do want to acknowledge that we have very caring people listening to this program, and they're in our chat room, and that's Bigfoot and Kath. Cat Strangler, of course, is Tim. Red Fox Blogger, of course, is Kel. East Anglian EDL Radio Show, and that, of course, is Jeff. Eric Kyle, Luchadora, Michael Kaplan, who will be phoning in shortly, No Way 90, Pontius U.S., and, of course, our own Bob, who called in. And I also want to thank Sue from New Mexico, who is listening on the line. And we want to thank everybody who listens in archive and are listening on other devices. This is a very special show that we have put together for you today. And Bigfoot posted something in the chat room, and I took a look at it. I was listening to the radio. I was listening to my radio shows this morning, and I had to stop in my tracks because there was something very special that happened this week, and that was it was a flash mob for a World War II veteran who died died alone. He was 99 years old. Harold Jellicoe Previsio, he died in a nursing home, and he had no close relatives to attend his funeral in Lancashire. But more than 300 people, including many in uniform, attended the ceremony after adverts were placed in local papers. Mr. Previsio served as a ground crew for Bomber Command and helped with the Dam Busters raid. And the two-minute Armistice Day silence was observed across Britain, of course, at 11 a.m. But this was wonderful. What happened is that there were actually 4,000 people who showed up, and the church in which his service was held only could accommodate 500 people. But there was a great turnout for a veteran who died alone at the age of 99 in a nursing home. And all these people, they got together. There was a shout-out on Facebook, and people showed up. And Harold had a funeral that would be fitting of a king. I am so grateful for Bigfoot of apprising me of that. And something else, Kath sent this video. She posted it in the chat room, and I downloaded it into the studio. And this is the new Warrior song, and this is from RIV. I want to play that for you right now. And when we come back, Michael will be joining us on the line.
Roam beyond the wildest dreams of men and snow, was first to reach the heavens above all the world below. By steel and wood, by sweat and blood, on wings of woven cloth, he lifted the surly bonds of earth to touch the face of God. But knowing times of trouble and the devils they may bring are only thwarted by the will to fight, he raised his mighty wings. Prepare for war, thus guarding peace, for liberty and love, he shall deliver unto thee. Death, don't
massive complaints for attack. And I'm gonna knock the shit out of them before they take off the ground. That's the nature of war. If you kill enough of them, they'll stop fighting.
Just released today, November 11th, 2013. It's a long one, but I'm pleased that Tim and myself, we could share that with you, a brand new release. That is the Warrior Song from ARV. Now, we have a gentleman on the line who's joining us, and that is Michael Kaplan. And I'm going to bring him on the air right now. And Michael, thank you very much for joining the Red Fox Blogger with Tim and Kel.
Hey,
how
Kel,
are you today?
It's a pleasure. How are you doing today?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Hey, Tim. Cheers, mate. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, it would help if I unmuted him. I'm sorry, Tim. I muted you.
Oh, that's okay. Don't worry about that. Yeah, Kel's always doing that to me. It's because I frequently
talk
to myself. You know, it just gets so embarrassing for her. So,
hey,
no,
I've been married long enough to know that women have an innate ability to be able to do that, whether they have access to a mute button or not. So no worries there.
Well, that's quite so. I mean, I always say, if I'm ever asked by my better half, why are you talking to yourself? I always say it's the only way I can be sure of a sensible conversation. And then I usually get the frying pan around the ears, and I have to run off into my dog kennel. But there you go. That's married life for you.
I feel your pain. Trust me. Well, Kel, I'm glad I had a chance. I'm glad I had a chance to call in. You know the drill. When Bob Ryan asks you to call in more than once, anything short of a sucking chest wound, and you better pick up the phone and dial. So here I am.
There you go. And you're a veteran as well.
That I am. United States Army. I spent nowhere near the amount of time in service that my brother Bob did. 82 to 89, but then I transitioned into government, so I lost the uniform, but I still continue my service.
So what do you think about the veterans today and their reception in the public eye? When I was talking with Bob, and when Tim was talking with Bob, we were querying about his reception when he served via Vietnam. And where was your service, and how do you feel your reception as a soldier is today?
I was actually in a very good time. I was in during the 80s. That was a very pro-military, very supportive environment. Nothing like Bob had to go through. I think today's climate is accommodating as well. However, I think if we continue the way we're going, I think we might actually see a transition back to, unfortunately, back to Bob's day. But that being said, I'm not going to try to predict the future on that. But, no, for me, it was wonderful. For me, it was absolutely wonderful. I didn't have to suffer any of the indecencies that he had to suffer. So.
You were listening to the beginning of the program when I played that song by Bob Reed and Highway of Heroes.
Yes.
That is how we treat our soldiers today. And we hold them in a sense of reverence that is beyond belief. And it's wonderful that we treat our veterans the way that we do today. Well, with the exception of our respective governments, we're having real issues with our veterans being treated decently in Canada with their benefits and their help in transition back into civilian life, for example. There's a lot of issues with the government end of it. But when it comes to the people really do love the soldier. And I am pleased there, Michael, that your reception is it's so well treated that you can say that you were doing a job and a job that had to be done. And Bob was doing the exact same thing. And look how he was treated when he came back from Vietnam and the hippies were literally spitting on him.
Yeah, that's disgraceful. That's absolutely disgraceful. I mean, we still have an element. We still have an element of society that does that. The very people that have the freedom to do that to us by virtue of our own actions, which is sort of ironic. But you know, you're always going to have that. There's no way to get away from that. But I think that the true sense of honor, as much as I appreciate the accolades, and I'm sure all service members appreciate the accolades, the honor has to come from inside. And you know, Bob is a walking example of that. You know,
oh, yeah.
you step off the plane, everybody can hate you for what you do, and if you know that in your heart you've done the right thing, the honor comes from the inside. So irrespective of how we're treated, I think that all of us would say we're proud to serve.
I would say so, too. And when we look at our men and women in the military today, and we see the entity that they're up against, and one thing I brought up earlier in the program is that talking about Montgomery Granger and his service in Afghanistan, and what he said was that there are over 70 countries that have American peacekeepers, and I'm alluding to the United States. Pardon me. I'm alluding to the United States because the United States does a lot of heavy lifting globally when it comes to keeping the peace. And soldiers do not aspire to kill, but when they have to, they will, because that is part of the job description. And when you were involved in theater, did you have to confront that, and how did that make you feel?
Yeah, I was actually, my time was actually spent in Latin America. I never went over to the Middle East. Now, I served afterwards in the Middle East as a contractor for the government, but in service I was down south. And yes, if you remember in the years, I actually, when I came in, I was welcomed into the military with Grenada. I was seen off with a salute with Panama. And in
wow.
between, yeah, welcome to the United States Army. Have a nice day. It was outstanding, though. No complaints whatsoever. That being said, yeah, we had to confront that. If you think of what was going on in Latin America during the time, Daniel Ortega, Nicaragua, everything happening in Honduras, our base in Tegucigalpa. We were down there, quote unquote, in an advisory capacity. I mean, at least Bob had the dignity to fight a war. You know, we were actually down there in an advisory capacity, but we had to confront the same issues they did. And it's just something that you have to reconcile inside of yourself. I don't know that you ever truly get past dealing with that particular issue. I will argue to anybody that the ability to point a weapon at somebody, pull a trigger, and watch that person fall as a direct result of your action is something you'll probably never forget. Somebody alluded in the chat room to remembering detail. It's amazing how conflict and trauma can cause people to remember details that no other human being on the planet would ever remember about an experience. I think Bob would confirm that. No, it's just something that we deal with. It's something that we have to accept. And if we can't accept that, then we remain conflicted. If we can reconcile it, then we do our best to do so. But at
and
the end of the day,
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say at the end of the day, really, it's not so much of a moral conflict as it is. There's no moral conflict, in my opinion, in executing a legal and lawful function for your government and
mm-hmm.
having to defend yourself and take the life of those who want to take yours. No moral conflict whatsoever. I think what hurts a lot of us more, and I'm not going to speak for anybody, but I think a lot of veterans would agree, the true trauma and the true conflict comes to watching those we serve with suffer. So, you know, I understand that the enemy's a human being. They have families. They're there by chance and circumstance as we are. And I empathize with that, but at the end of the day, it's a job. But the people to my right, the people to my left, the ones that I serve with, the ones that I know intimately, because in that environment, you tend to know everything about an individual. Those people, that's what really gets us. And in fact, I would argue that if you query most veterans who've been in combat, you know, they'll make reference to taking a life, and they'll talk about how it might be traumatic. But I think if you really let them go on about that trauma, the focus and attention will shift to watching their brothers fall. That's really when I see a lot of people come back today. That's really where I see the pain and where I see the conflict.
Yeah,
and I'm here to tell you, there is no way to get beyond that.
And that is a lot of the topic matter that Tim and myself have been covering on the program today, is about the issues that the soldier has to deal with. And speaking with Bob, it kind of breaks me because I listen to his testimony of how he's treated. It's bad enough that he has to deal with the traumatized issues that he had to confront, never mind to be literally spat upon by hippies that he gave the right for them to do. But it's refreshing that our soldiers of today are revered the way that they are, and they were revered in World War II and World War I. I don't know how to, you know, Michael, I'm lost for words some days, because what you do, it's so overwhelming. I cannot imagine doing what a soldier does, because it is a calling.
Nor
they
nor
always say, well, being a doctor is a calling, but being a soldier is a calling.
Of course it is. Of course it is. Bob and I were actually talking before your show, and
mm-hmm.
Somebody had made an offhanded comment to him when he retired after 33 years in the Corps. What is he doing now? He goes, I'm retired. And the person says, so you've never held a real job. You know, mind-boggling.
Oh.
And it's, you know, no, not only can you not imagine it, you don't want to imagine it. It does require a special mindset. Like I said, I served nowhere near the amount of time that Bob did, directly in uniform. Did spend 25 years in the government. But I got out after, 7 years? 82, 89,
mm-hmm.
7 years. Anyway, that being said, yeah, that's something you don't want to imagine, but it is. It's a dedication and commitment, not unlike being a firefighter, police officer, any type of civil servant. You know,
mm-hmm.
everybody has a function to serve. I think they're all admirable. I think everybody has a part to play. But I think that our government, not our government, our military and our civil service do actually take that up a notch, only because of what they're willing to sacrifice for people who'll probably never have a chance to thank them for it. So,
and I want to pass you over to Tim, because he is the fellow host. He's also a part of a Red Fox blogger on Mondays, and I've been hogging all of his time, and I know Tim is anxious to have a word with you. So, Tim,
I'm not in front of chat room now, but somebody, I think Lucia, had asked a question regarding Provost Marshall and arresting of the president. I just wanted to throw this out there. There's no specific there is no specific assignment of responsibility for who can arrest a president. That said, studies have been done, constitutional law studies. The closest person that could probably execute that would be the Sergeant of Arms of the U.S. Senate. That person has the authority to actually detain anybody in government. So I would just throw that out there as an answer to a question that was asked in the chat room.
Yeah, well, it's really good listening to you about with what you've got to say there. That's a good point about your president. I've been saying for a long time, over from this side of the pond, I still can't really understand why he hasn't been arrested and, well, not arrested, but at least impeached. Now, obviously, I don't fully understand the impeachment process because it seems to me that what he's doing is so totally against the interests of the United States of America on so many levels. I'm assuming I just can't fully understand the impeachment process because it just seems to me that he's done so many things that are worthy of impeachment. But
it's a mind-bogglingly difficult process. There's only been one president ever impeached in U.S. history. People seem to forget that Clinton actually made it out of office before the process could be carried out to fruition. And you know that last time that a president was impeached was, you know, at the very end, I think it was either late 1700s, the early 1800s. I think it's late 1700s. It's a mind-bogglingly difficult process that takes an incredible amount of political will. And I think that's the reason you don't see this happening is because our culture, our modern culture and society, lacks the political will to execute against the powers that be. So that would be my answer. The process is there, the procedure's there, the cause is there, but the people with the political will are not. And without them, nothing moves forward.
Yeah, well, I can certainly identify with that. We have a similar problem over here, of course, with the political will being totally absent from the people who ought to be making the decisions at this time in our history. But I don't want to get into the political side of things too much. I'm really interested in what people like yourself have to say, people who have actually served, because so many of us haven't had that privilege, and it's a unique experience insofar as there is nothing else like it. You can say, well, okay, being a soldier is like being... Some people might say, well, it's just like any other stressful job, but I would disagree. It's much more than that from what I can see from the outside. So I think it's so important that people like you have an opportunity to tell your stories on shows like this so that we can understand what it really means for somebody to sacrifice their entire lives. Well, I was going to say careers, but of course in some instances it's much more than that. It's sacrificing your entire life for your country, and it's something that many people just don't appreciate the importance of in times like this. And I think, you know, it's people like you are invaluable in with the experience that you have to come and share it with the rest of us. So
I appreciate that. I would suggest to anybody, if they want to know how difficult it is to actually live the life of a soldier or a Marine or anybody in uniform, one only has to look at how difficult it is for that person to transition out of service back into the civilian market. Sometimes we have to look at it from the other side. When I watch these people transition out of the military into civilian market, and I see the difficulties adapting back to a civilian market, the same one that they should be familiar with, the same one they came from, that should be representative of the change in mindset, the change in direction, the change in commitment that a person actually undergoes when they go to the military. Now, I'm not talking about mind, you know, no brainwashing. You know, nobody was ever brainwashed by the military. The military only brings out what's already there. But there's an acclimation process, and that acclimation process is extreme, and it has to be because the environment's extreme and the requirements and the obligations are extreme. So, you know, while you may not be able to tell somebody what it's like to go through that going in, I respectfully suggest to people, watch what these people go through coming out. And that should give them some indication to some degree of what these people actually had to do when they were in. That's my suggestion.
And I just want to let you know that we're down to the last 10 minutes, but our dear friend Tommy English would like to have a quick word with you. And Tommy, of course, is an EDL division leader in England. And Tommy, welcome to the program, and you're speaking with Michael. And go ahead.
Hey, Tommy.
Hello, guys. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you, Tommy.
Fine. Yeah, because I rung Tim out, and he kept saying he couldn't hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you now. Nice to see you, Tommy.
Yeah, it's nice to speak to you. Well, I was going to say, I've only just got back in. I know Sue did tweet me the show, so I thought I'd come in and listen in for the last half an hour.
I heard that.
I was going to say, is somebody with a chainsaw going then?
Yeah, there actually is somebody with a chainsaw. I happen to be outside right now while we're speaking. I'm trying to navigate away from the noise now. Sorry about that.
I was going to say, someone disrupted a memorial service in Darlington today. Don't know if you all heard about that.
I didn't hear about it. I saw you put it in the chat room. Pretty appalling. UAF, I understand.
Yeah.
Just when you think they can't sink any lower.
Well, apparently they've clowned on the cenotaph during the 2 minutes and started shouting peace, not war. They don't ask to get sent into war and all that. So I think we should start to think about a lot of people are getting conscripted.
You mean conscripted into the military?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't advocate a conscription service. I am very familiar with the former Soviet conscription service, and I would argue that what gives our military, at least the Western powers, what gives it its uniqueness and its power is the fact that it is an all-volunteer force. I think once you start looking at conscription, not to minimize what the people who were exposed to the draft. But I think the fact that these people are here of their own volition, their own free will, willing to do this, makes them the people of integrity that they are. And I think when you impose a conscription service, yes, you do actually build the quantity of the military. But I had the opportunity, especially in Latin America, to interact with Soviet military directly. And they were a product of conscription. And I am here to tell you that conscription does not work. I mean, outside of generating numbers, morale is low. They don't have the same motivation. They don't have the same drive. And I don't see it happening. I think it would diminish. It would diminish in quality so much that the quantity generated by conscription wouldn't justify that. And I think that the Western militaries have done enough studies on that to bear that out, and that's why I don't think they would ever think about it. My personal opinion.
What do you
and
think
I
about?
Could agree. I couldn't sorry. Agree more with that. And I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tommy.
No, that was me actually, Kel.
Oh, that
I was
you, Tim.
I got
a phone in my ear, and the thing's really annoying me.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
Sorry about that, Kel. I was just going to ask. What do you think about? You were saying conscription for motivational reasons isn't necessarily a good thing, and I can certainly understand that. But what do you think about the concept of national service, which used to be up until I think about 50 years ago, it used to be compulsory in this country, and of course there are countries. I believe it's compulsory in places like Israel. But when
I am so glad, Tim, that you just brought up. I am so glad you just brought up Israel, and I'll make this really quick. I spent 7 years working over there as a private contractor in South Israel. I was in a lot, Sderot, Ashkelon. I was working in advisory capacity, and the IDF is an incredible force. However, contrary to popular knowledge, they're now readjusting their compulsory service policy. It still exists on the books, but they have now allowed so many exceptions to it that literally 50% serve, 50% don't. Religious reasons, academic reasons, married, children, that the list goes on. People no longer has to serve. So you still you have a 1 in 2 chance of actually running into an Israeli citizen born and raised that has not served in any type of military capacity.
That's a really fascinating topic in itself. And, and Tim and myself, Michael, if you could spare some time on a Monday afternoon and speak with both of us about that, that would really be quite a topic that we could cover.
Yeah, and I know it's a long topic. Tim brought up Israel. I thought I'd throw that out there because they are a standing example of compulsory service. But even they are moving away from it now.
I'm writing notes madly.
Yeah, I mean, it just struck me when you were talking about the motivational aspect of conscription, and I quite agree. If somebody doesn't want to serve and you force them to serve, then you could actually cause a lot of unrelated harm through that process. But it would be better if you had people who were serving in the military who were motivated. And I was thinking, if only we hadn't got rid of the military service we had ourselves on this side of the pond in the United Kingdom, how much better it would be if our young people had understood right from a very early age what an honor and a privilege it would be to serve in your armed forces when you reached a certain age, and you would expect to do it. You would expect to spend a couple of years of your life doing that on behalf of your country. And I think it was a very sad day when they got rid of military service over here. Now, I don't know what you it was compulsory military service, and I suppose you could still refer to it as conscription, but the British government at the time had every opportunity to present it as something which every young person should look on as a privilege in order to defend the freedom of these islands and other countries. I can't understand why you wouldn't do it if you
absolutely.
Well, I think that's a topic, and I'd hate to interrupt, but we are down to our last 5 minutes. And
well, Kel, I tell you what, let me take this opportunity to take leave so you can do your thing. Tim, it was a pleasure. Tommy, pleasure. Bob, you're always my brother, Semper Fi. Kel, thank you very much. And
Michael,
you know,
I have you on Skype now. Can I give you a call a little later on?
You most certainly may. I'll welcome your
thank
call
you.
As a brief and welcome respite from my writing.
There you go. Oh, thank you, Michael. We will definitely be in touch. And this is something that I want to pursue on another program, definitely. But, yes, we are down to the last wire. And on behalf of myself and Tim, we want to thank everybody who joined us today and our Remembrance Day special. It was a very important show for us. I am eternally grateful that Michael called in and that Bob, of course, called in. Ladies and gentlemen, it is just a pittance of time. And Tim and myself, we're going to close out with this song. And Tim, do you want to say goodnight as well?
Yes, indeed. As Kel says, it's been really great talking to you, Michael, and talking to everybody else who's been on this show. A real privilege and an honor to listen to the stories of those who've been able to serve their country. And I certainly wish the show had been a lot longer, but there we go. And I look forward to speaking to you all again at some point in the future, whether it's on Kel's Red Fox Blogger Show or on one of the other blog talk radio shows such as EDL. I'd very much like it if you could call in.
And just to remind people that Tim Burton is a regular panelist at the East Anglian EDL radio show, heard right here on Block Talk Radio, Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 8:30 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. And there you go.
Oh, sorry there, Kel. I was just waiting for you to carry on and sign off. But that's all I really wanted to say. Just thank you to everybody and for making this such a memorable evening. Thank you very much.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, please do remember our soldiers, the veterans, and those who continue to serve. And please do take out a little moment of your day and remember, okay? I will see you back here on Friday at 7 p.m. Have a great afternoon, everybody. Have a great evening.
Yes, indeed. Good night, everybody.
Good morning, shoppers. At 11 o'clock on this 11th day of November, we'd like to invite you to share with us 2 minutes of silence in honor of our veterans.
They fought and some died for their homeland. They fought and some died, now it's our land. Look at his little child, there's no fear in her eyes. Could he not show respect for other dads who have died? Take 2 minutes, would you mind? It's a pittance of time for the boy and the girls who went over. In peace may they rest, may we never forget why they died. It's a pittance of time. God forgive me for wanting to strike him. Give me strength so as not to be like him. My heart pounds in my breast, fingers pressed to my lips, my throat wants to fall out, my tongue barely resists. But 2 minutes I will bide, it's a pittance of time for the boys and the girls who went over. In peace may they rest, may we never forget why they died. It's a pittance of time. The heroes at home, they have casualties, battles, and fears of their own. There's a price to be paid if you go, if you stay. Freedom's fought for and won in numerous ways. Take 2 minutes, would you mind? It's a pittance of time for the boys and the girls all over. May we never forget our young become vets at the end of the line. It's a pittance of time. It takes courage to fight in your own war. It takes courage to fight someone else's war. Our peacekeepers tell of their own living hell. They bring hope to foreign lands that hate mongers can't kill. Take 2 minutes, would you mind? It's a pittance of time for the boys and the girls who go over. In peacetime our best still don battle dress and lay their lives on the line. It's a pittance of time. In peace may they rest, lest we forget why they died. take a pittance of time.